Hey, good afternoon, Juno. It's just about 13 seconds after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO in Juneau, Alaska, where we are in the middle of Pledge Week. Right now, call 586-3636. Get a hold of Ann Fuller. She's standing by that telephone, and pledge to support your radio station, KTOO's Pledge Week. If you're out of town, 1-800-478-3636. And if you want to do it online, you can fill out the whole form yourself at www.ktoo.org. Now, for Juno Afternoon today, we've got a lineup of guests that are going to be really interesting. Mo Longworth is going to be here shortly to tell us about Light the Way for Justice. This is a national rally, and there are some activities locally that will be going on as part of that. Ishmael Hope is going to have a special reading on Saturday of Defenders of Alaska Native Country, and we'll talk to Ishmael or someone from that from the reading to find out details on that. Bob Purvis will come in to talk about employing technology to assist people with vision impairments. He's on his way to town to load people up some new software, which is available that almost makes the computer recognize when it needs to make the letters bigger. And Rachel Brown from Aware will come in to highlight upcoming advocacy training sessions. All of that is on Juno Afternoon. We begin, as always, with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous people in Argentina hope the new Catholic Pope, who's from their country, will bring a shift in church policies toward Native people in the region. More from reporter Eilish O'Neill.
As a priest and a cardinal in Buenos Aires, Jorge Bergoglio often worked with the poor in the city's shantytowns. There, he had contact with the Paraguayan immigrant population, many of whom speak Guarani, the language of the native people of Paraguay and of parts of Bolivia, Argentina, and Brazil. Paraguayan immigrant Celso Chamorro says the cardinal was often involved in celebrations in Buenos Aires of the Paraguayan festival of Caacupé.
And there, Bergoglio more than once held mass and spoke some words in Guarani to the people.
Now that Cardinal Bergoglio is Pope Francis, Carmen Burgos of the Coixa people of northern Argentina would like him to go a step further. Instead of just demonstrating his commitment to native peoples, she hopes that he'll make an official pronouncement about the world's indigenous populations.
If indeed it's true that, for example, the Catholic Church has committed itself to helping my people, I hope that there's a pronouncement supporting us and that there's the recognition or historical reparation that we're waiting for from the church.
Borgo says she and many of the indigenous people of Argentina practice a mix of Catholicism and of their ancestral beliefs and practices. For National Native News, I'm Anisha Neal in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
1 year after serious flooding on the northern plains in central U.S., several tribal lands had one of the driest years in history. A weather expert says things could improve in 2013. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Standing Rock, Cheyenne River, and Lower Brule reservations, along with tribal lands of the Yankton Sioux, were inundated by massive floods in the spring and summer of 2011. The next year, drought conditions sparked several major fires and devastated crops and livestock. Experts such as South Dakota State climatologist Dennis Toddy say there could be at least some drought relief this growing season.
We are probably going to see some improvements, and looking at some of those models throughout the rest of the spring, we have a decent chance for some precipitation for the spring that would improve our conditions and make things not quite as severe. I don't see anything in the offing that says we're going to be able to eliminate drought conditions over most of the state as we go on into the spring and summer. If we can get enough precipitation, certainly we'll improve it, but it's going to take quite a bit of precipitation.
Toddy says there is one upside of last year's drought. Most stock dams and creek beds left dry over the summer should handle runoff from melting snow and any spring rains. All of South Dakota's reservations are at least under moderate drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Family members and friends remember Army Specialist Lori Paestiwa. A sunrise service for her was held over the weekend in Phoenix, Arizona. It's been 10 years since the Hopi woman died while serving in Iraq. The service was held at Paestiwa Peak, which was named in her honor. An annual powwow is dedicated to a slain Native American student from the University of North Carolina. The Herald Sun reports family and friends remembered Faith Hedgepetch Saturday at the university's annual powwow. The 19-year-old was found dead in her off-campus apartment last year. Her death was ruled a homicide and remains unsolved. On this day in 1990, actor Kiowa Gordon was born. He's from the Hualapai tribe in Arizona. Gordon was part of the wolf pack in the vampire film series Twilight. One of his recent projects includes playing a military private in the movie The Projectionist, set for release this year. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick Click Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes and 34 seconds after 3 o'clock, and you are in tune with KTOO News. We're in the middle of Pledge Week this week. We'd like to remind you to call us at 586-3636. Ann Fuller is standing by the telephones right now, and we'll take your pledge. If you're out of Juneau and you want to call, it's a free call, 1-800-478-3636, or you can pledge online at www.ktoo.org. Pat Moore, your host today. My first two guests on Juneau Afternoon are here to tell us about a reading, which is becoming kind of like the national sport of Juneau. About the third or fourth of these we've had just recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
good. But anyway, Florida, Lino, Lagunino, I did it. I did it. I got it.
Hey, thank you.
Hey,
very
I got
good
it.
Pronunciation.
I 30 times through before.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ishmael Hope are here. And Ishmael has written a play called The Defenders of Alaska Native Country, which is, I guess, the story of the formation of the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood organizations?
Well, the original draft had that, but now the direction we're going more is focused on, like, the 1940s and 50s, and with William Paul as a sort of driving force, but just hopefully trying to honor all of these amazing leaders of Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood. And also putting some focus on Andrew Hope, Frank Johnson, Elizabeth Paradovich, Roy Paradovich, and Lewis Paul. You know, I named my son, actually, Lewis, you know, based off of Lewis Paul and Lewis Shotridge, actually being inspired by both of them. And it's just a great history, and I'm just trying to explore it, maybe with flaws, maybe getting parts wrong, maybe, you know, overlooking or missing some things, and messy at times, but I think there could be vitality in just exploring artistically this amazing history.
So you're holding a reading, and are you going to do the feedback session that's followed some of these in the recent past? Are you looking for input?
That's possible. I think that we wanted to have a life, obviously, on stage in a full production, so I think it would be helpful to hear people's comments. We haven't really discussed that, but I think that actually we probably should have something like that, mm-hmm. Just to hear people's comments about it. What they latch onto, what they didn't know beforehand, I think is actually a very good thing. I've learned so much through this process. Ishmael's been working on this, I think, for 2 years now.
Yeah, about two, three years
now. And just the information that he has putting into this play. He went down to actually Seattle for quite a month or so researching William Paul. I think his information is or past documents are in Seattle. Where is that? At the University of Washington?
Yeah, University of Washington.
So. Yeah, so it's been great to be able for him to unearth this information for us to interact with it.
I'm not as familiar with that name or who that person is. Can you give us kind of a summary of the role that William Paul plays?
Yeah, and that's really why I'm doing this play. I mean, there's so many ideas on how theater should be done and plays should be done and stories should be told. And I think there's vitality in just exploring this beautiful Native culture and this amazing history. And that, however it goes, if you could capture that great history, I think that's a good play, that's a good story. And then just go from there and just be led by that. And William Paul was just really one of the most just amazing, complex, flawed, you know, heroic, you know, lawyers, an Indian lawyer, a Native lawyer, mm-hmm. in the 1920s. I mean, just think about that. And he was elected to the Alaska legislature in 1924. And he won the right to vote for Native people. You know, right after that, there was the American Indian Naturalization Act, but I think it was William Paul's work that led directly to that. And he led and initiated the land claims for Alaska Native people. And something I really just believe in is just this idea that our right to be ourselves, indigenous people, to practice our culture and to lawfully recognize the United States' laws and also our own indigenous laws and come into agreement on Aboriginal title, on questions of sovereignty, is just an important thing. It's an important thing to explore. It's very unexplored. I think people may be afraid or unwilling to explore that history and just want to bury it in the past. And I think it feels good and it's worthwhile for everyone to, I think, explore this history as Alaskans.
So when you say Paul was flawed,
oh yeah,
in what way?
he could be egotistical. He could be, you know, there was one letter I came across where he said, oh, when Mr. Indian followed William Paul, he reached his highest heights, and when he stopped following him, he reached his lowest lows. So he didn't have
an ego at all, did he?
Yeah, he was very, you know, and then that goes against a lot of Native elder wisdom, Native elder values. But at the same time, because he was just so persistent and direct and forceful with issues, it shaped the issues, and we got so much, you know, as much as he conflicted with so many other Native leaders, there are people like Roy Paradovich and Judson Brown who gave him so much credit, him and his brother Lewis Paul, they gave him so much credit for what they did for the Native community.
Florida Lino, you're directing the,
yes.
the reading, and I guess one of the questions that I wanted to kind of explore, and we're kind of almost running out of time, mm-hmm. but, and maybe so it may be too big a question, but let's take a run at it. Anyway.
Yeah, sure.
So here it is. When you analyze history, when you talk about a bunch of events that have occurred, it is really easy to slide over into a recitation of those mm-hmm. events on stage mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and watch your audience fall forward in their chairs and make
yeah.
snoring sounds.
Yeah.
So, Mike, how have you gotten past that? What do you do to make it come not only real but, you know, life-giving?
You know, the thing is, we haven't really been able to explore that part of it yet. Most of what we've been looking at is the writing. Hopefully, this time around, I talked to Ishmael about it. We really want to try to see how it works a little bit on its feet,
mm-hmm.
And to really explore it that way. When you do these readings, sometimes you concentrate so much on just the basic through line, and that's what we've been kind of doing over the last year and a half, is like, what mm-hmm. kind of story are we telling? And it's not until you get on your feet that you really see, okay, this is what the play really wants to do. And that's what we're kind of, you know, definitely we're keeping that in mind. We don't want people to fall asleep or anything like that. and the thing is like, this is a very interesting thing, is like, what is Native theater? I mean, that's the big question
yeah.
that I have in my mind
mm-hmm.
right now. And that's the big thing that Ishmael, I think, has been kind of talking about throughout this process. Here we have these events, and we want to bring these historical events to life, but what is the framework in which we're putting that in? What is it? Is it a Western point of view? Is it, and what is Native theater? So, We're going to be asking a lot of those questions this coming week.
One thing that I try to do is using, certainly, you know, when you're doing a dramatic play, that's like a Western framework, and then, you know, you're going off from the ancient Greeks on down.
Right.
But at the same time, that's just a framework. What I'm trying to fill it in with is a spirit. And I'm asking the collaborators and everyone to try to explore that with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they get a chance to explore. And that happens at this free one-night-only reading at Clinkett and Haida Community Center on Saturday, March 30th, 2013 at 7:30 p.m.
All right.
The world's opening to this thing? Is this the first time you've actually taken it out of the box?
I think we did. There was a reading of it
about a
year and a half ago. And then,
And then we workshopped again more just internally. And then now this again.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Cool. Well, thank you for telling us about it.
Thanks
I'm
having
hoping
us.
You get a crowd.
Okay.
Thanks.
So.
See you
thank
later.
You.
Little Chief. Minutes and 28 seconds after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Pledge Week. Please call 586-3636 and pledge your support to KTOO. If you're out of town, it's 1-800-478-3636. And we're online at www.ktoo.org. You can fill out the form and complete your pledge right through that process. My next guest is coming to me from out of town, as a matter of fact. We've got a fellow on the phone here named Bob Purvis. Dr. Purvis is from Sitka, and he is going to be coming up to Juneau to introduce us to some new software, which is available for people who have vision impairment to kind of bring the computer screen into focus. Bob, welcome to Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you very much.
You bet. What's the weather like in Sitka?
Actually, I just checked. It's about 42 degrees and a little bit of sunshine.
You got a little on us then. It's raining here. Anyway, you'll have to go away from that sunshine, I guess, this week.
You bet.
Coming always, up here Thursday, I guess, right?
Always enjoy my time in Juneau.
Yeah, you're coming up Thursday, I see.
I am. You bet.
Okay, and tell us about this software. What have you got?
Well, Pat, I've been legally blind for about 13 years. It hit me when I was about 63, and this thing called macular degeneration. So I no longer drive, and I can no longer read or use a computer without some assistance. And so I use a program called Zoom Text. And I just recently had some additional training in Zoom Text and down in Oregon, and there's a new version of Zoom Text out that I just wanted to share with people who have vision issues or who have problems seeing the computer and would like a little bit of assistance being able to zoom things up or actually have a screen reader that they could actually use to hear things being read to them on the screen.
Now, when you say you're legally blind, you still are capable of recognizing large letters and that sort of thing. Is that right?
Yes and no. Yes, I can. Yes, on my computer. Yes, I zoom things up probably 6 to 8 times normal size. So when I'm looking at the computer screen, I'm seeing probably just a quarter of what is on a website.
Now, when my mother began developing macular degeneration, she started writing with magic markers.
You bet.
Because she could make the letters large enough that she could see a note to herself later.
That's right. In fact, like I use a pen called the 2020 pen. It's like a magic marker, except that it's not permanent, and it will wash out of one's clothing if you get it in your clothing. So, in fact, markers, I carry them with me everywhere.
My mother was known as the lady with the black thumb. She.
I see.
Anyway, but I understand a little bit about this this disease, or I guess you qualify it as a disease. It's sort of a ongoing thing that just keeps getting, you lose more and more and more of your vision as you go.
That's correct.
Yeah. So anyway, as someone uses Zoom Tech, what's going on? How do they see, and what do they do in order to be able to recognize characters on the screen?
Well, if you have vision, you can zoom things up to where you're able to see letters and items that are on the screen. As I said, I use a 6 to 8 time zoom. But what I find myself using more and more is the screen reader application that comes with Zoom Text. And so with a couple of keystrokes and a left click on my mouse, I can have a segment of the screen read to me. So when I'm looking at a document, it's just really easy to use Zoom Text, or use the screen reader. But in addition to Zoom Text, I also have some other assistive tools that I have found very useful that I want to share with people as well. So,
good. Bob, I worked with a guy who was blind for about 3 years back in Kentucky years ago, and he had a DOS-based, this was a while ago.
Right.
Yeah, had a DOS-based screen reader that was, I would have lost patience with it, but he used it constantly. He was a PhD in marketing at a university there. I'm wondering how the technology has advanced. Is the reader any good at this point, or does it stumble over words and mispronounce things badly?
Well, for the totally blind, there's a program called JAWS that's basically just a total screen reader, and magnification doesn't do you any good in the computer because you can't see it.
Right.
But with Zoom Text, the screen reader, and there's others, screen reader programs out there as well, but Zoom Text is quite accurate, and there's several different kinds of voices. You can either listen to Paul or Kate or some other voice, and it's quite easy to understand what's being read to you from the screen.
So you're moving in that direction yourself, it sounds
yes.
like.
Yeah, well, I use both the screen, both my limited vision that I have, as I look around the screen, and even if I zoom things up, I can read those items, but it's easier for me to use the screen reader.
And probably faster because it's, the size is going to limit the amount that can be displayed on the screen by a lot. So some of these other tools that you're bringing up, can you tell us about some of those?
Sure. Well, one of the programs that I have discovered recently is provided by a group called Cerotech, Cerotech. And Cerotech is primarily a website and some programs for the totally blind, but they have a program called DocuScan Plus. And it's not an expensive program, but what I'm able to do is to use my all-in-one printer, which has a little scanner on it. I'm able to scan a document into my computer, and when I scan this document, it goes to an OCR server someplace in the Midwest and then comes back to my computer in about a minute and a half. And then it begins to read it to me. And what's neat about that is that I can edit that document, I can save the document, and I can save it to a file, which then allows me to access that from any computer, any place in the country or the world virtually. So,
can you, Bob, can you create a document and send it through this process so that you can then do editing on it? Could it be your own document that goes into the big server? Or would you need
Yes, you can. But you'd have to give people permission then to access that. So,
I see.
You bet. Yeah, you bet.
Are there other tools that allow you to create documents yourself?
Well, of course, there are in the computer. You have Microsoft Word, but I mean, you're talking about documents that can be...
Well, I'm wondering, I mean, I can see what I write when I'm writing it.
Right.
And that's a big tool that I use because I have full vision, but I'm trying to imagine how someone with limited vision would compose, say.
Well, with ZoomText, when I use ZoomText on my computer, I pull up Microsoft Word, and with ZoomText, I can have a number of controls. I can actually set ZoomText to where it will read to me word by word, or it will read each keystroke, or it will just read an end of a sentence, or so it's very easy for me to compose using ZoomText.
Wow. Okay. So ZoomText, and then this other tool that allows you to...
Yes. And then also, as you know, Apple has created a number of accessible tools for their iOS devices, their iDevices, and I use a program called what's called VoiceOver.
That'd be like iPhones and iPads.
Correct.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Exactly. And there's a number of apps that I have found that I like to share with people that have if people interested in research that's being done currently within vision or other areas. There's a number of podcasts that I have that are easy to access, and I like to share that with people. So I want to share some apps. I want to share some how easy it is to use VoiceOver on an iDevice. And so I'm encouraging people, if they are interested in ZoomText, interested in a software program, if they bring their laptops in, what I can do is put a trial version on their laptop that's good for 60 days. And it's a full version of ZoomText, but it will be there with them for 60 days so they can try it.
Bob, you're the president of the board of directors for Sail, right?
I am.
Yeah. So I guess you don't have to pay rent for the facility when you come up.
That's correct.
So you're 9 to 4. Are you envisioning that people will drop in on you, or are you envisioning that they will stay for several hours, or how's this work?
What I'm asking people to do is to call and give Laura kind of a heads up as to who might be coming and what their needs are. And as people do drop in, I just want to learn as much from them as they perhaps can learn from me, because it's as I have learned over the past number of years, those of us with vision issues, we've learned to adapt to the situation, and we've so I want to learn what other people are using and doing, as well as sharing what I'm doing as well. So, but I want to be there for folks who might have a particular issue or a barrier they're trying to overcome, and so I'll just deal with people as they come in, and whether it's one or two or three or four, it doesn't make any difference.
Bob, thank you so much for making this available to people. I really hope that anyone who hears us that needs these things can get in touch with you on March 28th at Southeast Alaska Independent Living Headquarters here. The office is at 3225 Hospital Drive. It's in Suite 300. And if you want to call in advance, that is a big help. It's 586-4920. 586-4920, and Laura Lucas at that number will take the phone calls and get you set up to meet with Bob when he's in town and look at some of this new software that's available. Bob, I'm really happy that you're bringing this stuff up. I really am. That's a great service that you're providing.
Well, you know, as we get older, many of us are having vision issues, and what has happened, Pat, is that over the number of years, I just have learned so much that I just like to be able to share it. In fact, it was because of Sail a number of years ago that helped me get some training initially in some computer software, and as a result of that, I wanted to become involved with the board, in which I've been for a number of years now. So SAIL has been a wonderful organization for me in the past, and it's a great organization now. I just hope we can help some folks on Thursday.
Outstanding. Thank you, Dr. Bob Purvis from Sitka. We'll see you Thursday here in Juneau.
Thank you, Pat. Much appreciated.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 25th of March, 2013. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you odd." She said, "Where you come from is gone. Where you thought you were going to never was there. And where you are is no good unless you can get away from it." She didn't want a biography written about her because, she said, lives spent between the house and the chicken yard do not make exciting copy. Flannery O'Connor, born in Savannah, 1925. When she was 5 years old, she trained a chicken to walk backward, and a newsreel company came to her house to make a film about it, which was shown all over the country. She said, "I was just there to assist the chicken, but it was the high point in my life. Everything since has been anticlimax." Spent much of her life on the family farm in Milledgeville, Georgia, raising various birds, writing novels and short stories, Wise Blood, The Violent Bear It Away, A Good Man Is Hard to Find, and Everything That Rises Must Converge. This last book of short stories published after her death in 1964 at the age of 39 from complications of lupus. Flannery O'Connor, who said, "Everywhere I go, I'm asked if I think the university stifles writers. My opinion is that they don't stifle enough of them." It's the birthday of the writer who said, "A woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle." That was Gloria Steinem, born in Toledo, Ohio, 1934. Her father, an entrepreneur, traveled all over the country in a trailer looking for new business ventures. Steinem said he was always going to make a movie or cut a record or start a new hotel or come up with a new orange drink. She traveled around with him, never went to school until her parents separated, and she moved in with her mother, who suffered a mental breakdown. Steinem said, "My mother was an invalid who lay in bed with eyes closed and lips moving in occasional response to voices only she could hear. A woman to whom I brought an endless stream of toast and coffee, bologna sandwiches, and dime pies." Gloria Steinem, who had poor grades in school, but she managed to get into Smith based entirely on her entrance exams. After college, went to work as a journalist. She made her name with a piece called "I Was a Playboy Bunny" in 1963 about working undercover at Hugh Hefner's Playboy Club in Midtown Manhattan. Went on to found Ms. Magazine in 1972. Gloria Steinem, who said, "Writing is the only thing that when I do it, I don't feel I should be doing something else." And that's the birthday of Kate DiCamillo, born in Philadelphia in 1964, grew up in Florida. After college, moved to Minnesota. Her first winter in Minnesota was one of the coldest on record. She missed Florida terribly. She desperately wanted a dog, couldn't have one, and began writing a story about a stray dog that helps a 10-year-old girl adjust to life in a new town. It was her novel Because of Winn-Dixie. It was a bestseller when it came out in 2000. Here's a poem for today by Frederick Smock, entitled "Morning." All year long there is the table by the window, blue cups with white rims, the black teapot. There are sometimes flowers when we remember. There are paisley napkins and always oranges. The window looks down into a courtyard and sometimes up into blue sky. A poem entitled "Morning" by Frederick Smock, from The Bounteous World, published by Broadstone Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. supported by Reputation.com, whose Reputation Defender service is designed to help businesses and professionals improve their search results. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Five minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. We are at KTOO in the middle of our pledge drive. And if you want to get your telephone moved over by the radio and continue listening to the show, you can call 586-3636, and Ann Fuller will answer the phone, and she will help you pledge your support for KTOO. If you're out of town and you don't want to pay the long-distance charge, then you can call 1-800-478-3636, and the same thing will happen. And if you just don't want to fool around with the telephones or all that sort of stuff, but you would like to pledge support for KTOO, you can go on our website at www.ktoo.org, and the form will pop up in response to your clicking on pledge, and away you'll go. You can fill it all out yourself and complete the form and submit it, and you will be pledging your support for KTOO. We have a lady who is pledging quite a bit of support to an organization as my next guest here. Rachel Brown is here to tell us about an upcoming training that is being offered by Aware. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Pat.
Yeah, welcome to Radioland here.
Great, thanks for having me.
Rachel and I know each other through a couple of other directions, so
great.
It's kind of nice to have her on the show and be able to look into her eyes here. So this is a two-part training, and it's a total of, looks like, 40 hours.
40 hours, yep.
And when someone goes through this training, what have they learned?
Yeah, so this is a 40-hour advocacy training that we offer twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. And it's pretty comprehensive. It does a lot to explain what our agency does specifically, why we do the work that we do, and has the potential to broaden people's perspective on the issues that women and children face, issues of domestic violence and sexual assault, both on a local level and a national level. We talk some about historical trauma and historical context for the women's movement. So it's really comprehensive and just gives people an opportunity to learn about something that they, you know, an agency, I'm sure a lot of people in Juneau have at least heard of Aware. And this is a way to learn a lot more about the things that we do and the issues that we're trying to address in the work that we do, and it's both for people who are interested in being a part of our agency and just other agencies in town or community members who are interested.
So when is the training?
The training starts next Monday, April 1st, and it runs all the way. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And the first portion runs through April 11th, and then there's a second part as well, and that's April 13th to the 15th, and these are in evenings and weekends, so people who are working can hopefully fit it in as well.
Okay, and you're doing some of the training. Who else are you partnering with to administer the training?
Great. So we have a variety of staff members at Aware. I would say almost everyone who works there has a portion that they get to participate in and to be supportive of the overall mission of the training. We also have a piece that I think is really important. That's a community panel, and that's where we bring in some other professionals and agency members that we utilize a lot and who we work in collaboration with quite a bit. That includes Bartlett Regional Hospital in Tlingit and Haida and Office of Children's Services, OCS, and just some other agencies that we're integrally involved with.
I want to get back to the dates and times and all that sort of stuff, but
sure.
I have you here, and I want to ask a couple of questions about Aware and about the state of domestic violence in Juneau.
Right.
I know you can't deal too much in numbers because it's a very personal thing, but the governor has put a major push for the last, I think 3 years or so, on trying to reduce domestic violence in the state of Alaska.
Right.
Are you seeing effects from that campaign?
Well, that's a good question. I think the beautiful thing for us is it brings things to the spotlight is much broader and brighter. Having someone like Governor Parnell involved and First Lady Parnell involved, First Lady Sandy, she has been really involved as well. And I think what it does is it brings a spotlight on an issue that we know is has existed here for a long time and continues to be a problem. Of course, Alaska has higher rates of domestic violence and sexual assault than other parts of the country do. And so it's exciting to us that he felt like it was important enough to start a campaign around, and it wasn't to serve aware, it was to serve the state of Alaska mm-hmm. and people who live here. And so I think it's done a lot to, yeah, bring it to light and to create some events that the community can be involved in that help talk about it in a way that is comfortable enough for people, because it is a really difficult thing for people to talk about and think about. And so instead of having people have to come forward and share a lot of personal things, we can highlight statistics a little bit, and we can, you know, put some faces to the issue. And, you know, there have even been some legislature members and other people who, community members who've come forward and shared their own experiences or been willing to talk a little bit about how it's affected the communities or villages that they live in. And, yeah, I mean, it's a great way for us to work with our local politicians. And, you know, just coming up on Thursday, the 28th at noon, is the Choose Respect March. So that's mm-hmm. happening in the Capitol. And so this training and that being sort of starting about the same time this spring is pretty nice. It combines really well because those themes are the same things that we're talking about, because a lot of time awareness can change the culture of how things are addressed.
And I guess the other question that I wanted to ask is, assuming that someone feels like they have a need for the AWARE shelter or some services from AWARE, what do they do?
Yeah,
how do you get in touch here?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really people can call us or stop by anytime. So we essentially run a 24-hour crisis line, so we pick it up all day, every day. And anyone can call that phone number and speak to an advocate on the phone. Anyone who answers the phone is trained as an advocate, so whether or not it's a business manager or a shelter worker or a children's counselor, we're all trained in being able to answer the phones. And we do crisis intervention. We talk with people about safety planning, so if there's immediate concerns, they can talk about where they can go and what they can do and who their support system is. And then really, you know, we don't turn away many people to stay with us as well, so we'll take as many women and children who need a spot to be, or we'll make some arrangements to try to help them be safe. And you can also stop by and ring our doorbell, and we don't turn away people either. We always make sure we give everyone some time.
You also said when you talked about the nature of the training that it involves bringing in other agencies that whose missions kind of fold together with AWARE.
Correct.
Is it possible in just a moment or two to kind of give an idea of the panoply of services that someone could access if they came through AWARE?
Sure. Yeah, it's pretty extensive. I'll try to highlight most of them.
Okay.
So we provide safe shelter for women and children. We, at this point, are a shorter stay shelter, and we're currently working on providing some longer term housing for families who are trying to, you know, make a new start and reestablish some safety and some general successes, however those are defined for those people in life. We also do advocacy, so that's crisis intervention and, you know, not necessarily counseling, but support and just having someone have someone to talk to about the traumatic experiences that they've been going through. We have two children's counselors on staff. That's one of my jobs at AWARE. I'm one of the children's counselors. We meet with 3 to 18-year-olds. Both in the building there at AWARE, and also we work in the high schools locally in town providing some counseling through the teen health centers there. We have legal advocacy, so those are people who help with any sort of legal issues that come up for people who walk through our doors, so that's protective orders, stalking orders, things like that. In addition, custody issues and, you know, divorce issues, things like that, so people who are just needing some guidance about those things. We also have a volunteer coordinator position, and I'm actually helping out with that now. That's part of why I'm here today, and that helps facilitate all the amazing volunteers that come and help us function. As a nonprofit, we rely on them quite a bit. And we also do education and prevention, and those two things are pretty extensive. We have Don Colden, who goes into the schools and teaches about body safety and you know, what good resources are to keep yourself safe in town. And then the prevention staff is working on with programs like Girls on the Run and coaching boys into men, and this is rather than needing to be retroactive to try to be sort of proactive in addressing these issues before they become really relevant in kids' lives, and providing a lot of good role modeling. And that's the start of it.
Rachel, what brought you into the Aware Shelter? How did you become associated with them?
So I, about 4 years ago, heard from one of the prevention staff, who's a personal friend of mine, that there was a children's counselor position open. And I thought it would be a really unique opportunity to challenge myself, because it's a population I haven't worked with as much. I've worked a lot with at-risk teenagers, and I would say I had a strong interest in, you know, women's issues and the safety of children in our community in general, and I've learned a lot more since working there, so I feel a lot more passionate about it now that I understand it so thoroughly. I would say that the advocacy training, which I took about a month into my employment there, was a real eye-opener. I learned a lot. You know, my answer for why does domestic violence happen has changed exponentially from before working there until now. And so, yeah, I just thought it was a great organization, a really solid group of people who work there. And there are people who are making a change in our community, and that's something that I can definitely get behind.
Is this limited to women?
This training?
The training.
Definitely not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the dates again, the first part of this runs from April 1st through the 11th.
Correct.
And that's meetings on Monday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Thursday.
Correct.
Okay. And then the second part of it starts on the 13th, and it's only 3 days.
Right.
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. The sessions last are set up in the evening. On the weekends, they're set up 9 to 5.
Right.
So a tremendous amount of material coming available to you.
That's right.
By taking the thing.
A lot of material.
How does someone tell you that they want to do this?
I think the easiest thing to do would be to contact me to Aware.
Okay.
So my number there, our general number is 586-6623. You can just ask for me and they will find me. And I also have an email address, and that's Rachel, RACHELB, at awareak.org. But anyone who answers the phone will be able to help them start off on the right foot.
Training, opening at Aware, advocacy training, April 1st through the 11th, April 13th through the 15th. Contact Rachel Brown and get yourself a slot if you're interested in doing this. It sounds like a wonderful opportunity to learn a great deal and to help the community as well.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it.
Renewable Energy Alaska Project is dedicated to promoting clean, stably priced energy solutions for Alaska. A contribution made to REAP through Pick, Click, Give helps advocate for renewable energy and energy efficiency in Alaska. PFD recipients can add or update their Pick, Click, Give selections until August 31st. More information is at realaska.org. This message is brought to you by REAP, a voice for renewable energy.
This is Bird Note. In an old-growth forest in the Pacific Northwest, three young women honed their birding skills. What got them started? Here's Maya Paddock, who lives in Pennsylvania.
I love monkeys, but unfortunately, it's really hard to go outside and look at monkeys. And so I went outside and I went, I can go look for birds because there are birds here. And so from then I just started looking for birds.
Here's Anya Auerbach of New York City.
Well, my mom was always really into nature and, you know, she took me outdoors to Central Park, so I sort of gravitated more towards the birds as time went on. They're beautiful, they're full of life, and you can see them basically anywhere.
And Alexandra Hale?
I grew up in Utah, so my parents showed me moose and bears and wolves, and I absolutely loved that. And then we moved to New York City, and I was miserable. So I went to Central Park, and I ran into these birders who were watching a red-bellied woodpecker nest, and they were watching starlings kick the red-bellied woodpeckers out of the nest. And I just got immediately hooked.
As you know, an interest can take you new places. Here's Maya again.
I have a much greater appreciation for science than I had before I started birding.
To learn more about birding camps run by the American Birding Association and Victor Emmanuel Nature Tours. Begin at birdnote.org.
Just about 10 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of our pledge drive. Please give us a call at 586-3636 and pledge your support for the K2, K3 stations. Ann Fuller is standing by the telephones, hoping that you'll call her and make a pledge. If you're out of town, you can do it on 1-800-478-3636. And if you don't have a telephone or don't want to use a telephone, you can go on www.ktoo.org and fill out the pledge form right there. Weather forecast just got updated a couple of minutes ago. They're saying tonight we see rain showers this evening, then rain and snow likely late tonight. Little or no snow accumulation, though. The snow level is going to stay up around 900 feet this evening and lows around 34. Southwest winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. So kind of a nice evening. Tuesday, we're looking at rain and snow showers likely. Little or no snow accumulation. Highs should be up around 39. South winds 10 miles per hour. And then Tuesday night, we're talking about increasing clouds, isolated snow showers in the evening, lows around 29, variable winds 10 miles per hour. But looking over the rest of the week, all the way through, we've got rain and snow likely each day, but the highs are going to stay up in the 30s, mid-30s to high 30s, so it's going to melt off as fast as it drops. So we'll probably increase the melt, and could it be? Could this be? Are we? No. Could be it's spring, could be. No. Wanted to remind you again that Bob Purvis is coming in from Sitka. He's going to be at the sale offices this weekend. This Thursday from 9 to 4. And he's bringing up some software with him that will help you if you are suffering from any vision impairment, that will help you to read your computer screen. So this is a wonderful service that Bob Purvis from Sitka, board of directors president for SAIL, the Southeast Alaska Independent Living, and he's going to bring this software up, and he'll actually install a trial version of it on your computer for you if you drop by SAIL headquarters Thursday, March 28th, between 9 and 4.
I know you've deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play and never see you when deliberately you put me in my way, well, here's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too, you're gonna lose that smile, because all the while, I could see for miles and miles, I could see for miles and miles, I could see for miles. Of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles, I can see for miles and miles.
that you have, 'cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh yeah.
The Eiffel Tower and the Taj Mahal might see on clear days. Thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, there's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles.
Join us this Thursday for A Night in Madrid. It's a KXLL fundraiser at the Zephyr Restaurant starting at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday night, with a five-course gourmet dinner of Spanish cuisine, live entertainment, and exotic Spanish music. See the full menu and buy your tickets at ktoo.org for A Night in Madrid.
March's Mudrooms was a couple of weeks ago, I guess about a week ago, and it's the theme was monsters. Mudrooms is this thing where people come in, there's seven of them, and they do they each do 7 minutes of talk on a topic, and so it was monsters. Tony Newman will talk about his attempt to find his lost wedding ring. Rudy Ascott on how an official suicide attempt let him gain the controllers of Super Mario Brothers. Vance Sanders with Lynn Schooler on the devastation of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Amanda Compton whines about her fear of earthworms. Pat Race tells about a college streaking experience. Crystal Hudak about word monsters. And Max Blust on real honest monsters. Max is the first high school student who has opted to do one of the talks for Mudrooms. Anyway, Mudrooms is airing tonight on KTOO at 104.3 FM at 7 p.m. So these 7 minute stories will all be on the air tonight at 7. Right now, it's your turn to be on the air, kind of. You've got to be on the telephone. Call 586-3636. If you're out of town, call 1-800-478-3636. If you're allergic to telephones, go on www.ktoo.org and fill the form out there. But pledge your support to KTOO. The money goes to do all of the wonderful programming that we bring you on this radio station. Let's see. I want to tell you that we broadcast on a whole bunch of translators around the area. We are KTOO Juneau. We're at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also translated on 103.1 in the Valley and Auk Bay area on K276AF. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on 88.1 megahertz over K201 AM. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. 9 megahertz on the FM band, and Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait hear us at 89.9 megahertz over K210 AS. Our closeout music is by Diana Stork. She's doing a concert here in town Saturday, March 30th, 7:30 p.m. at Northern Lights United Church. So more of her harp can be heard then. We'll hear some more now. I've really enjoyed being your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I'll be your host again tomorrow for Juneau Afternoon. And tomorrow we'll be talking with the folks from Marie Drake Planetarium. They're doing a show on the Big Bang for Beginners. We'll get details on Thursday's Choose Respect rally. Phil Paramore, Harrison B., and Sam Burrows will come in and do a preview of Wednesday's concert at the UAS Rec Center. And Sarah Marino will come in to talk about the optional programs in the Juneau School District. Pat Moore, I've loved being your host today for Juno Afternoon. I'll see you again tomorrow at 3.